All right, if everyone will take their seats, we'll get started this morning. Welcome to a bright and early Criminal Justice and Public Safety Subcommittee meeting. Lindsay, please call the roll for us.
Chair Brannon.
Here.
Vice Chair Roach. Ranking Member Grieco.
Here.
Representatives Barnaby.
Here.
Beltran.
Here.
Lusada Cabrera. Bush.
Here.
Casello.
Here.
Chambliss. Fetterhoff.
Here.
Gregory. Haig.
Here.
Learned.
Here.
Maney.
Here.
Rizzo.
Here.
Snyder.
Here.
Thompson.
Here.
Tuck.
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. As always, we'll remind everyone to silence your cell phones. If you want to speak, please fill out a speaker's appearance card. We have a two-hour block with, it looks like, 10 bills today, so if everybody will keep that in mind. We want to get to everybody, but we want to be fair about it. We do have to hear 10 bills in that block of time. So we'll get right to it. We'll start with HB 1509, Private Investigative and Security Services by Chair Byrd. Chair Byrd, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to start your committee off today with House Bill 1509. Private investigators and security guards are regulated and licensed under Florida law. Although they perform different tasks, if either one carries a firearm while working, they are also required to have a state-issued G license. This bill will allow private investigators with a Florida concealed weapons license to carry a firearm while working. This bill allows private investigators who are retired law enforcement officers with a LEOSA, which means Law Enforcement Officer Safety Act card issued by the federal government, to carry a firearm while working. And this bill allows active law enforcement officers, like we have the men and women today, whose agencies allow them to work off-duty as PIs, to carry a firearm while working. That is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chair Byrd. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Any questions? I see no amendments. Is there public testimony? Looks like John Gaspar, FAPI, waves in support. Oh, okay, thank you. Ari Morse, Florida Association of Private Investigators, wishing to speak. Thank you. Waves in support. Barney Bishop, Florida Association of Private Investigators. Thank you, Mr. Bishop. Waves in support. And Barney Bishop again, Florida Smart Justice Alliance. Waves in support again. John Raymaker, Florida Department of Agriculture. Says he wishes to speak, but he also waves in support. Any other public testimony? Okay. Members, we're now in debate. Anybody wishing to debate? Everybody awake? Chair Byrd, I guess you're recognized to close on your bill.
I'll wave close, Chairman. Thank you.
Having closed, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 1509 and announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby.
Yes.
Beltran.
Yes.
Lusada Cabrera.
Yes.
Bush.
Yes.
Casello.
Yes.
Chambliss. Fetterhoff.
Yes.
Gregory.
Yes.
Grieco. Haig.
Yes.
Learned.
Yes.
Maney.
Yes.
Rizzo.
Yes.
Roach. Snyder.
Yes.
Thompson. Yes. Tuck.
Yes.
Chair Brannon.
Yes.
15 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. Show HB 1509 reported favorably. Congratulations.
Chairman.
We'll now move on to HB 1571, Residential Picketing by Representative Maggard. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Brannon and the members of the committee. I'm honored to present HB 1571, an act relating to residential picketing. HB 1571 will prohibit a person from picketing or protesting before or about a person's dwelling with the intent to harass or disturb a person unless such picketing or protest complies with a county or municipal ordinance authorizing residential picketing or protesting. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Maggard. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Representative Lerner, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative, for the bill. I saw early versions of this that didn't include prison time, that included things like civil citations, making it a, you know, something that we could cite people for. I just question why, what the intent is in having to put people in jail on this first offense.
Well, if you don't mind, we got an amendment coming up, and then I'll address your question. Because I don't think it's up to automatic jail time. It's up to the judge to decide that. Because based on the secondary misdemeanor, if I have it correct, it's up to 60 days in jail, 6 months probation, and or a $500 fine. So it's up to the judge to decide how bad the offense was.
Record asks for a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Also, and I don't think this is, I did see your amendment, but I don't think this is addressed in it. But
okay.
The issue involving, like, can you just explain why we can't already prosecute somebody in front of our house, right? Like, if they're trespassing, if they're taunting, if they're harassing, you know, all these things are already crimes. So what do we need this bill for?
As law was written today, and I've got several that can answer to this, disturbing the peace requires a written statement or a signed affidavit, and this bill's tailored to the scope. That's what it's designed to do compared to what you can do by the law today.
One more follow-up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. I just don't think I understood your answer. So you're saying that the current laws don't allow us to take care of these situations, or that they do and we're just adding an extra thing?
Correct. Today, if you're going to have a disturbance of the peace, somebody has to cite something, somebody has to report it, and somebody has to sign a statement and a written affidavit that to be taken care of. This is to residential picketing, that the law officials can come to that place and take care of it. They don't have that ability today.
Mr. Chairman.
Final one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If somebody was outside my house harassing my family, or I could call the police right now and have them cited for harassment and trespassing. I guess my question is, why do I need a separate law if I can already do that?
I'm going to bring up a law official to answer that question better than I can.
Okay. Can we take care of it in public testimony? I think you probably got a prepared statement. That might be the best way. Any more questions? Any other members? Seeing none, we'll now move on to the amendment, barcode 018761. 018761. Representative Maggard, you're recognized to explain that amendment.
This amendment makes changes that will bring the language more in line with the Senate version, provide a narrow definition of the term dwelling, provides that any violation is a second-degree misdemeanor, and requires a law enforcement officer to provide a warning. That is the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Rep. Maggard. Any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, any public testimony on the amendment? John Mina, Orange County Sheriff's Office. Thank you, sir. He waves in support. No other public testimony? Any members wishing to debate on the amendment? Debate on the amendment. Seeing no debate, Representative Maggard, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
Wave close, sir.
Having closed, members, if you favor the adoption of the amendment, signify by saying yay.
Yay.
If you oppose, say no. By your vote, the amendment is adopted. We're now back on the bill as amended. Back on the bill as amended. Is there public testimony on the bill as amended? Dr. Russell Meyer, Florida Faith Advocacy Office. Waves in opposition. Don Scott, Jr., Southern Poverty Law Action Fund. Waves in opposition. Kara Gross, American Civil Liberties Union of Florida. Waves in opposition. And once again, John Mina, Orange County Sheriff's Office. You're recognized, sir.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Sheriff John Mina, the sheriff in Orange County, Florida.
I apologize. He's telling me to say that. I apologize. I butchered your name.
Oh, that's okay. It's happened all my life.
He's got me covered.
From the Central Florida area.
Thank you, sir.
I'm just a poor, dumb North Florida guy, so I apologize for that.
No worries at all. Well, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak on this residential picketing bill, and I'm happy to answer all of your questions at the end, but I do have a lot of experience in dealing with this. I've dealt with this as a chief of police in Orlando and also as the sheriff in Orange County. I know some of my counterparts across the state have had to deal with this issue as well. You know, our most sacred location is our home, where we don't want to be disturbed, harassed, or intimidated. I think, you know, all of us as elected officials are used to, you know, people disagreeing with our views, and certainly we're used to that at businesses, at shopping centers, at the Publix, or at City Hall, or at the county admin building. But what I think us and our neighbors don't wish to see is that when we come home to that sacred home, that we're not intimidated or harassed at our home. So last summer, I dealt with this specific issue in Windermere in Orange County, where there were about 200 protesters that had targeted a specific residence because of who had lived there. And those 200 protesters were there for about a week to 8 days. The residents there, because of the nature of the protests, were very leery about making any complaints or causing any issues, but they were uncomfortable. And I went out there myself and talked to them because there was no remedy for their complaints at that time. They couldn't walk their dogs. They couldn't let their kids ride their bikes because they felt unsafe because of the intimidation that was there. Some people left the neighborhood and stayed in hotel rooms, those who had the means to do that. That's how uncomfortable, intimidating, and harassing the activity was. And then, you know, 2 weeks ago in Orlando, we had neo-Nazis come to protest in our area. It's not out of the realm of possibility that those folks could target a specific residence. And I think we would all agree that no one would want 20 people standing in front of their home wearing swastikas with hateful speech. And I think as you know, more and more people want to express their views and protest and rally, you're going to see more of this. Because many other organizations, they know to get attention, specifically media attention, there has to be confrontation. And so that's what I'm concerned about, is the confrontation that this will cause. I know in my neighborhood, if someone were a group of people were to protest or rally in front of my house, my neighbors are going to come out and protect me, and that's what I'm trying to prohibit. And so back to that situation I dealt with, there was no remedy for me, okay? They weren't on the person's private property. They were on the roadway or just on the sidewalk. And you know, a lot of people say, why don't you arrest them for blocking the roadway? Well, as soon as law enforcement comes up, they just step out of the way and let the car or the people go by. And as far as getting disturbing the peace or those other issues that you talked about, many folks, although they do not want the picketers and protesters in front of their house, they don't want to get involved. They just want law enforcement to handle that situation. They don't want to put their name on a statement, because then the people who are protesting, intimidating, targeting, and harassing them are going to know they're the ones who called law enforcement to have them arrested. The way I handled it when I was chief in Orlando, we had an ordinance like this, and we would go out, we would get in touch with the organizer of the rally and say, look, this is against the city ordinance, you need to leave. And 9 times out of 10, they would just leave the property. So this law would give us the opportunity and the tools to solve those issues that our neighbors have with people targeting or intimidating or harassing their residents. And I think in most cases, you'll see no arrest or no jail time. You'll see law enforcement meet with the organizers of the protests and say, look, there's a law against picketing, targeting, harassing someone's individual home. We're going to need you to leave or you'll be arrested. So, again, thanks for the opportunity, and I'm happy to take any questions. Yes, ma'am.
Representative Thompson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good to see you, Sheriff Mina. My question has to do with the definition of harass and disturb. I represent the town of Windermere, where I live, and the situation that you mentioned has to do with people who gathered in front of the second home owned by Derek Chauvin, who knelt on George Floyd's neck for almost 9 minutes. And they were peaceful. They did march in front of the home. They wrote on the sidewalk in chalk, which could be washed away with water. They did not disturb the home in any way. What is the definition? What kind? They were peaceful. So my question is, what comes under your definition of harass and disturb?
Well, you know, I think it's not a matter of if, but when, as we've seen in other jurisdictions, when the next, say, controversial police shooting happens, where that officer or deputy may be in their home and may be the subject or target to those protesters' rally. And, you know, the harassment and intimidation, I think it was key. That would have to be witnessed if it was a... If it was simply a peaceful protest, you know, I think that's a little different. But when you're targeting someone's specific home, and I would argue that, you know, 20 or 30 people with signs, stand with hurtful things on the signs, standing in front of someone's home, can be very harassing and very intimidating to anyone. I know I wouldn't want that. I know my family wouldn't want that. So it's going to have to be a case by case basis, each situation.
One more.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Sheriff. And I'm glad I have you on speed dial.
Absolutely.
How would you suggest that the people who came to Windermere, and I was involved with them, I told them that Derek Chauvin was in jail in Minnesota and that he was not present in Minnesota, in Windermere. How would you suggest that they demonstrate or show their displeasure?
So that's a great question. We had suggested to them that they would get more attention if they had moved across the street to the shopping center there. I believe there's a Publix and all that. There was plenty of room for them. People along the four-lane road would have seen them, would have seen their signs. And I just think that's why many people choose City Hall and the County Admin Building and the courthouse, where people are used to seeing protests and rallies, and really get more people to see. The issue that I have is these rallies and protests that in front of a residence, targeting that specific person in that residence, will lead to confrontation. And I'd rather take care of the issue beforehand with a warning rather than have to respond to something. Like I said, if that happened, you know, in my neighborhood, in front of my house, my adult sons are going to show up there, and there's going to be confrontation. And that could go for any one of us. I think you should be able to be safe in your home and not be targeted because of your views, your position at your home.
Thank you, Sheriff.
Thank you. Seeing no one else, I appreciate you making the trip, and I do apologize. In my 30-something years at the sheriff's office, I tried to never mess up my sheriff's name, so I do apologize for that. Thank you, sir, and thank you for your staff for coming also. Next will be Jack Porter, City Commissioner, Tallahassee.
Hi, thank you. Good morning. My name is Jack Porter. I'm a City Commissioner here in Tallahassee. I'm also a member of Local Progress, and we're here to speak against this bill as a local elected. You know, I certainly would not want people picketing outside my house or even just sitting around my house. But at the same time, I don't feel like this is a problem that really requires a legislative solution to this extent. I'm worried about the consequences, the implications, some of the uncertainty and lack of clarity in this bill. And what on the ground it's really going to look like, the additional responsibility that it's going to give our law enforcement, who with all due respect to the sheriff, who I believe have the skills to de-escalate these kinds of situations. Y'all may know already, but I mean, Tallahassee, we've had 26 shootings this year alone. And my goal is that we can focus our law enforcement into addressing that kind of violent crime and not bogging them down with this kind of stuff. So thank you.
Thank you. We have one more appearance card, Ida Escamani, Florida Rising, waves in opposition. Seeing no one else, Representative Maggard, you are recognized to close on your bill. Debate. Any members wishing to debate? Representative Grieco, Ranking Member Grieco, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thinking about this bill this morning has been kind of a roller coaster because I've been known to attract some controversy in my day, and I don't want anybody, protesting outside my house. But you know what? I think I'm really, really down on this bill. I thought I was torn on it, but I'm not. And as I sit here and I listen to the description as to how it would be implemented, how it would be applied, it's like picking winners and losers on the Constitution. We have folks come in here and they're hardcore Second Amendment, but they don't even know what the Eighth Amendment is. Or they're hardcore on the Fifth Amendment, but I would love to know if they know what the Tenth Amendment is. This is First Amendment. It's so arbitrary. It is so subjective. They're just going to be arresting everybody. This is a recipe for broad brush disaster. And it's funny that this bill's coming up after the whole legitimate political discourse commentary from last week, because it's a fine line, right? What is intimidating to one person may not be intimidating to another. What is upsetting to one person may not be upsetting to another. I think it sucks that somebody would have somebody screaming and yelling outside their house. This is America. If they're on a public street, there are probably about 50 different things you can be cited for if you're blocking sidewalks, if you're blocking streets. HB1 alone gives you the right to do almost anything if you're a cop if a bunch of people are standing out there. So I'm down on this bill. I'll probably be much more articulate if this ever hits the floor. God, I hope it doesn't hit the floor. But for now, I'm down, not just as the ranking member, but as an American and somebody who respects the Constitution. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Thompson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I mentioned, I communicated with the individuals who gathered in Windermere, and they were peaceful. They were not destructive. And I think we're going down a road where, and under HB1, where people simply will not be allowed to gather. And I'm concerned about that. I have a very good, in my opinion, working relationship with Sheriff Mina. We had a situation where a restaurant in Windermere was open to the public during a time when they were supposed to have takeout only. And the owner of the restaurant said, well, you'll just have to make an example of me. So I called the sheriff, and he went to the restaurant, and we got it all sorted out. But it was the neighbors who contacted me that they felt the restaurant was putting the rest of the community in jeopardy and not following the guidelines and the protocols with regard to how we deal with COVID. So I'm concerned about the bill, particularly when you talk about peaceful protests and people gathering to show their concern with regard to an issue. And so I'd like to work with the sponsor, Representative Maggard, if we can, to see if we can make this a little bit less punitive for people who are not violating anyone's rights in terms of destroying property or damaging property. So I'm going to be down on the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Beltran, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Rep. Maggard, for this good bill. Just responding to some comments by my colleague, Rep. Grieco, I too greatly value the Constitution, both the First Amendment and all those other amendments, and I know what all of them say, by the way. But turning to the First Amendment, it's very clear our case law, really for the last century, has been very clear that you can place legitimate time, place, and manner restrictions on the First Amendment, and that is exactly what this bill does. After hearing some of my colleagues' comments, I went back and looked at the language of the bill, and it is, in fact, content neutral. It doesn't discriminate against what you're protesting or who you are or anything like that. It just says if you're picketing with the intent to disturb somebody. So, and that's the intent of the protester, not of any subjective reaction by the homeowner or the neighbor or anything like that. So the bill easily passes a constitutional muster. If we want to have a policy debate, we can have a policy debate, but the bill clearly passes constitutional muster, and any court in the state or anywhere else would dismiss a case that was attempting to strike it down. And I point out, Rep. Thompson gave the example of Derek Chauvin, and he had a residence in Central Florida in Rep. Thompson's district, and I was aware of that. And of course, he was in Minnesota, and frankly, if Derek Chauvin's disturbed, I guess that's, I don't really care. I guess maybe he kind of deserves it. But what about his neighbors? That was the issue, right? I mean, it was his neighbors were there. They didn't have a winter residence in Florida. It was their full-time residence, or at least they were there, and they were the ones who were disturbed. So it's not just maybe for the public official or the public figure who's created some controversy. It's also for those neighbors and the rest of the people in that community that they are not going to be harassed. And as for the suggestion that's necessary to protest in front of a residence, as the sheriff said, if you're inside a community or inside some residential area, it's probably not a major road. It's probably not going to get as much traffic as a commercial area. It's not even a conspicuous place necessarily. And so in terms of getting your message out, which is the core of the First Amendment, it really doesn't impede any necessary channel in that regard. And final thing I say is the commissioner said that you know, the sheriffs have other tools and they can de-escalate and so forth. And that's true. Our law enforcement is very good here in Florida, but the law enforcement is up here today. They're specifically requesting this tool. They've testified that the current tools are insufficient, and nobody's rebutted that through debate or questioning. And so I think we should go ahead and give them this tool that they've requested. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Beltran. Anyone else in debate? Seeing none, Rep. Maggard, you're recognized to close on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee, for all your questions and concerns. I want you to know that I am very pro-First Amendment as anybody, but when it comes to my family and my kids, they can protest me anywhere they want to. When it comes to my family and my children or my grandchildren, I think there are certain times they can. And that's why I support this bill, and hopefully I get your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Rep. Maggard having closed on his bill. Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 1571 and announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Lisada Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Chambliss?
No.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
No.
Haig?
Yes.
Learned? Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Thompson?
No.
Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Brannon?
Yes.
14 yeas, 3 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. Show HB 1571 reported favorably.
Thank you, sir, committee.
You were fast. I was trying to give you a little time. We'll now move to PCS for HB 1511, Retail Theft, by Rep. Clemens. You're recognized, Rep. Chair Clemens.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. HB 1511 has to do with retail theft. Back in December, Florida's Attorney General launched the Florida Organized Retail Crime Exchange. That's a task force and a database that allows law enforcement, prosecutors, and retailers to work together to quickly identify the massive organized retail theft
rings. Since taking office, Attorney General Moody's office, a statewide prosecution has filed nearly 60 cases involving more than 250 individuals suspected of organized retail theft or crimes related to organized retail theft. This is becoming a larger and larger problem, not only in Florida, but across the nation. This piece of legislation, should you choose to support it, will help the effectiveness of this force and give our prosecutors the tools they need to prosecute these criminals and help strengthen our current law. Boosting is a term that I'd really never heard of before, but boosting is the basic act of walking into a store and stealing items without being caught. This can be done in a number of ways, from pocketing smaller items to simply walking out the front door with a cart full of big-ticket merchandise and enough confidence in your step to not be questioned by the store employees. As to directly this bill, HB 1511 was filed to make changes to Section 812.015 of the Florida statutes to more clearly define and add penalties for organized retail theft, based on the feedback that we've received from prosecutors around the state about any additional tools that they might need to combat this growing problem in Florida. We're focused on criminal activity of boosters who steal multiple items from multiple locations in a short period of time. That's the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir, for that explanation. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Seeing none.
There is an amendment, Mr. Chairman.
See no amendments. Appearance card. Dr. Russell Meyer, Florida Faith Advocacy Office. Waves in opposition. Kara Gross, American Civil Liberties Union of Florida. Waves in opposition. Ida Escamani, Florida Rising. Waves in opposition. Matthew Dunnigan, Florida Sheriff's Association. Waves in support. Grace Lovett, Florida Retail Federation. Waves in support. Libby Guzzo, Office of the Attorney General. Waves in support. Timothy Nunn Gesser, National Federation of Independent Business. Waves in support. Or wishes to speak? Come on. You're recognized. Come forward. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tim Nunn Gesser, representing National Federation of Independent Business. I wanted to start by thanking the bill sponsor for bringing this good bill forward. There is a very serious issue out there with organized retail theft. There is an issue with online sale of these items and that sort of thing. We feel that this is a great bill. It's a targeted bill. It targets the criminals that are doing the activity, that are stealing the items. So with that, we urge your favorable consideration, and thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for those comments. I have one more. Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waves in support. We'll note that. Thank you, sir. All right. Any other public testimony? I see none. Members, we're now in debate. Ranking Member Grieco, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And despite my love for the sponsor, I'm going to be down on the bill. Why are you laughing?
I'm not laughing.
I got love for you, man. But it's all right. We can hug it out later. It's fine. I'll be down on the bill. I think we're going in the wrong direction if we're going to start increasing penalties for nonviolent offenses more than we already have. With all the talk starting last year in this committee, I remember the first speech I gave when we did our introductions and we talked about criminal justice reform, and I haven't seen much of it, and respectfully, this goes in the wrong direction. There are plenty of tools in the toolbox. I'd love to know which prosecutors don't think that they can prosecute repeat offenders for retail theft. There's plenty of enhancements. Second degree felonies are reserved for pretty violent crimes, and it's very rare that I would encourage anyone to vote up on enhancing penalties for nonviolent crimes, and this would be one of them, so I'm down. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Maney, you recognize?
Y'all know I don't usually speak in committee, but in my previous occupation, probably in the last 7 or 8 years, I saw an increase both of misdemeanor or petty theft, shoplifting, and felony theft where somebody either had the hit the value, prohibited value to make it a felony, or had prior misdemeanor felonies. And then we started getting the bands that would rove from town to town and state to state. And it's very, very difficult for prosecutors to prove those charges. I mean, in thefts, you have to fingerprint a defendant. How do you get that from other states when they don't have that requirement? I think this is a very needed bill to address a very specific problem that is emerging in our culture, where people not just steal from a store, but make it a professional, organized operation to go in groups from store to store, stealing lots of things. I'm going to be up on this bill, and I thank the sponsor for bringing it.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else in debate? I'll just dovetail off what he said. In my career, we oftentimes would have criminal units that would even use U-Hauls. And sometimes we'd arrive at the scene, and then they disperse all it. We're close to an interstate. Easy pickings. Get off the interstate, hit us real quick. We chase them through the parking lots. They go into the neighborhood. It disrupts the whole town. So it does have further ramifications other than just the act of stealing. It does disrupt the communities. Anyone else in debate? Seeing no one else, Representative Clemens, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In closing, I would just say that this is not about little Johnny, who's a good boy. He's just misunderstood, and little Johnny makes a mistake, and he goes in and he boosts something or he steals something, and you know, he's on about his life. This is about organized crime. This is not your everyday, you know, theft or shoplifting. This is about organized crime. The way that this particular bill is written is to help people who are skirting the limits of the penalties by staying just below the limits of the more serious felonies. This only applies if you steal 10 or more items or 20 or more items within a 30-day period of time. This is solely to help bring stronger penalties to organized crime. And those thefts are affecting all of us. Certainly they're affecting the small businesses that are in our particular communities that are hit by these roving bands of bandits. And with that, I would like to say that this bill in its same form has passed through two committees in the Senate unanimously with bipartisan support. So it is a very good bill. I would ask for your support today, and with that, I close, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Rep. Clemens, having closed on this bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on PCS for HB 1511 and announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Lucetta Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Chambliss?
No.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
No.
Haig?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Thompson?
No.
Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Brannon?
Yes.
15 yeas and 3 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. Show PCS for HB 1511 reported favorably.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We'll now move to PCS for HB 97, withholding from the return of cash bonds by Representative Andrade. You recognize, sir.
Thank you, Chair, and I'd like to note for Ranking Member Greco that your concerns can be assuaged on whether or not I have an understanding of the Eighth Amendment. This bill specifically fixes a problem that we've had in the state of Florida for a very long time, and that problem is if a third party like your grandmother or your aunt or your uncle posts a cash bond for you as a criminally accused defendant, they will not get the money from their cash bond back, even if they make sure that you show up for every court date. If you accept a plea and fines and fees are a part of that plea, that money will come out of your grandmother's cash bond that she posted. This bill simply says that if a third party posts a cash bond for a criminally accused defendant, the clerk of court cannot withhold fines and fees from that criminally accused defendant's sentence or plea deal before returning that cash bond back to that third party. It also revises the notice that's required to be put on the forms before someone posts cash bond.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Any questions? Representative Maney, you recognize?
I just have one question. You have other stops on this bill.
Recognize?
Thank you, Chair. And Judge Maney, yes, I do. I believe your concern might be about the fiscal impact of clerks not being anticipated. I'm working with the clerk of courts right now to fully kind of wrap our arms around that concept, and I'm not insensitive to the fact that this would result in probably fewer fines and fees being collected by the clerk of courts going forward. If anyone has more concerns based on what I just said, one of the big issues and one of the big reasons why I believe that this bill is needed is several years ago we had Amendment 4 here in the state of Florida. And I supported Amendment 4, I believe, in Amendment 4, you know, granting accused felons, sentenced felons, the right to vote again is important to me as well. But Amendment 4 also said that fines and fees are a part of the sentence. This is one of the few components right now in Florida law where we are still sentencing someone else who's not been accused of the crime to serve a part of the sentence for the accused.
Seeing no one else, we'll now move to amendments. We have no amendments. I show no amendments. Now for public testimony. Gregory Black, R Street Institute, waves in support. Sarah Couture, New Venture Fund, waves in support. Kara Gross, American Civil Liberties Union, waves in support. Nate Shade, Horizon Communities Corporation, waves in support. Okay, members, we're now in debate. Anybody wishing to debate? Representative Maney, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. I don't know what it is about today that I'm talking so much. But first, I want to thank the sponsor for bringing the bill. I do think it has some merit, and he has been very helpful and responsive to my questions. I'm going to be up on the bill today, but I do urge you, and he and I have talked about working with the clerks. When a third party posts a cash bond, there is a notice on the bond form that tells them they may not get their money back until the defendant pays the fine and cost if assessed. So I'm not quite as worried about it as the sponsor, but I understand his concerns. I also understand the clerk's concerns, and if you can get those worked out, I'll be up later. But at this point, I am up. Thank you.
Any other member in debate? Ranking Member Grieco, you recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm up on the bill. In response to your text message earlier, I am up on the bill. As one of the few people on this committee that work in this space, this has been an issue over the years, and I'm way up. I'll be up through the whole process on this. I don't think that folks other than the defendant himself or you know, direct relative, like the spouse, should get dinged for fees that the defendant has incurred during the process. So I'm up on the bill, and I encourage everybody to be up on the bill.
Anyone else in debate? Representative Barnaby, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I work in this space as well. I'm a strong believer in defending the Constitution. And for the purpose of those that are in the audience that don't know it, I'm an ex-Englishman, so I had to study this little booklet that I carry around here. It's the Pocket Constitution. And I turned to my friend, Grieco, and I said, I got it all right here. But I just wanted to quote the Eighth Amendment. It's a short verbiage. You all know it. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishment inflicted. That is the Eighth Amendment. And I support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else in debate? Seeing none, Representative Andrade, you are recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Chair. I want to thank you for working with me on this bill and letting me kind of bug you to death about it. And I also want to thank staff and in the committee for helping work with me on this PCS. And I do want to note, I think this is the first time in my service in the Florida legislature that the ACLU has waived in support of a bill of mine. So I'll be walking a little bit taller out of this committee after this vote.
Thank you, Representative Andrade. Having closed on his bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on PCS for HB 97 and announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Boussada Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Brannon?
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. Show PCS for HB 97 reported favorably. Next bill we'll take under consideration is HB 341, Sexual Offenses Definitions by Representative Schlossberg King. Welcome. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. House Bill 341, Sexual Offenses Definition. The term vagina and vaginal are not defined under Florida law, but are used to describe prohibited sexual conduct in various sections of the law. Without a definition to specify what the legislature intends to be included in the meaning of the terms, determining the meaning of the terms is left to the courts. Currently, the Florida District Court of Appeals have conflicting opinions on the definition of vagina. Specifically, the second and fourth DCAs have held that the term vagina has a specific anatomical meaning and that it is internal, while the fifth DCA has held the term vagina includes the entire vulva area, not just the internal passageway. These different interpretations regarding what the term means may lead to different outcomes for the same conduct, based on the circuit in which the offense occurs. House Bill 341 amends a number of statutes relating to prohibited sexual conduct to replace the terms vagina and vaginal with the terms genital or genitals, and to provide that genitals include the labia minora, the labia majora, the vulva, hymen, and vagina. By making this change, this bill removes any ambiguity in the meaning of the terms vagina or vaginal and resolves the conflict within that Florida DCAs regarding the definition of the term vagina, which may lead to more equivalent outcomes amongst the circuits based on the same conduct. And that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any questions on the bill? Seeing no questions, I see we do have an amendment to bar code 257659. You're recognized to explain this amendment.
Thank you, Chair. Current law, specifically Chapter 39.01, relating to sexual abuse of a child, already uses the term genitals in a manner intended to refer to both male and female genitalia. Therefore, defining genitals in a manner that only describes the female anatomy may exclude behavior involving the male genitals that is covered under current law. To avoid this issue, the amendment replaces the term genitals in the bill with the term female genitals, and that is the amendment.
Thank you. Any questions on the amendment? Questions? No public testimony. Members, anybody wishing to debate on the amendment? Debate on the amendment. Thank you, Representative. You're recognized to close on your amendment.
Thank you, Chair. I waive close.
Having waived or closed, if you favor the adoption of the amendment, signify by saying yay.
Yay.
If you're opposed, say no. By your vote, the amendment is adopted. We are now back on the bill as amended. Is there any public testimony on the bill as amended? Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waves in support. Anybody else? Okay. No more testimony. We're now in debate. Any members wishing to debate on the bill as amended? Seeing none, Representative Slossberg King, you are recognized to close on your bill as amended.
I waive close.
Having closed on her bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 341 as amended and announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Fusata Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Thompson? Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Brannon?
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. Show HB 341 as amended, reported favorably, and congratulations. We'll now take up HB 169, parole eligibility by Representative Hart. Welcome, and you're recognized.
Good morning, Chair Brannon, Vice Chair Roach, Ranking Member Grieco, and the other committee members. House Bill 169 is a bill that requires the Commission on Offender Review and the Department of Corrections to jointly develop a voluntary long-term inmate program, which requires program to provide evidence-based programming to inmates and establish eligibility. Currently, the way the system works is FCOR will send someone to the facility that you're housed in for an interview for you and the warden. After that interview process, they determine that you should be released. Your case is then referred to a 3-member panel of FCOR to review. Due to the lack of clarity of what makes someone eligible to be released, many times FCOR tells the individual to go back to their facility and complete further programs over a number of years, which they do not define, before they can come back to FCOR again. This happens often and creates a cycle of individual constantly rotating through the system, wasting many of our resources. In September, there were 4,095 people that were eligible for parole, but only 25 were released. My bill would not ask for any new programs to be created. It simply asks that programs already operating in our facilities be allowed to count towards the possible release of those deemed eligible. OPAGA reported in 2019, on an average, it cost us about $59.50 a day to supervise someone in our correctional facilities, but only $5.47 a day to supervise them in our community. We all know how dire this situation is right now in our correctional facilities. There's a need to do something to ease some of that burden, both physically with the number of people that we house and as well as a financial impact. The bill does both. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hart. Are there any questions, members, on the bill? Any questions? Seeing no questions, we do have an amendment. Amendment barcode 110575. And Representative Hart, you're recognized to explain this amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment makes the bill physically neutral by requiring DOC and FCOR to administer the long-term inmate program within the department's existing resources, and removing a requirement for the long-term inmate program to be offered to both male and female. Currently, it's only offered to males, and we were asking to let that remain. Specifies that inmates who are serving a parole ineligible sentence in addition to a parole eligible sentence may be considered on a case-by-case basis for the long-term inmate program, but that inmates serving only parole eligible sentences must be given priority for the program participation. And it makes some other technical and clarifying changes. That's the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Hart, for the explanation. Members, any questions on the amendment? See no questions. Public testimony. Have no public testimony amendment. Anybody wishing to debate? Any members wishing to debate on the amendment? Seeing none. Oh, Representative Barney, be you recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hart, I want to thank you for bringing this bill. Thank you for your compassion for those that are incarcerated. And I think this bill will help those that have rehabilitated themselves and have the opportunity for parole. Again, I commend you for what you've done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rep. Park, you're recognized to close your amendment.
Waive close.
If you favor adoption of the amendment, signify by saying yay.
Yay.
If you're opposed, say no. By your vote, the amendment is adopted. We're now back on the bill as amended. Any public testimony on the bill as amended? We have several. Nate Shade, Horizon Communities Corporation, waives in support. Aaron Waite, Florida Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, waives in support. Dr. Russell Meyer, Florida Faith Advocacy Office, waives in support. Brenda Spitzbarth, Florida PRR Families United, waives in support. Denise Rock, Florida CARES Executive Director, waives in support. Laurette Phillipson, Advocate for the Incarcerated, waives in support. Don Stevens II, representing the Incarcerated, waives in support. Karen Gates, waives in support. Philip Suderman, Americans for Prosperity, waives in support. Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waives in support. Kara Gross, American Civil Liberties Union of Florida, waives in support. And Ida Escamani, Florida Rising, waives in support. Come forward. We'll just ask you to fill out a card in a moment. Okay, but come forward. You're recognized.
Thank you. Good morning, and thank you for letting me speak. My name is Karen Gates. I hope it's okay if I just read this because I'm a little nervous. I'm the surviving victim of my mom, who was killed on December 15th, 1986, by my former brother-in-law. My brother, Cale, stood outside the house and did not intervene that night. There was a third person, but they were never charged. My brother, Cale, was just 18 years old when this happened. He accepted responsibility for his role and pled guilty to the judge, leaving it to the judge to determine his sentence. The judge sentenced Cale to life in prison with the possibility of parole within 25 years. It has now been 35 years. He has been well-behaved in prison, participated in programs, and worked whenever these things were offered to him. For me personally, each time Cale has had a parole hearing, I have been the only person who speaks for or against his parole. I have spoken to the Commission on Offender Review 5 times, each time asking for my brother's release. 5 times I've had to relive my mom's death and to beg the Commission to release my brother to me. No consideration is ever given to my wishes as a surviving victim of this crime. Today I'm asking you to please consider HB 169, and to make a positive change that would allow FCOR to administer a long-term prisoner program for people who are parole eligible. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Dr. Russell Meyer. You're recognized.
Thank Welcome. You, Mr. Chair, representatives. Just quickly, thank you, Rep. Hart, for this beautiful bill, and we need more of this. I just want to share with you that my congregation over the holidays was visited by a probationary who needed work because his job site shut down, and if he didn't work, he wasn't going to be able to make his probation fees, and he would end up being violated. He's turned out to be the best worker we've ever had. And it's the hardest working man I've ever seen. And one day we were working together doing some demolition in our church, and he turned to me and he said, "Pastor, you're the father I never had." He's 44, 28 years in Florida prison, arrested when he was 15, served in juvenile detention to his 21, barely out a year, got caught up, had no capacity. Finally, now at the very end of his sentence, if something goes wrong in the next 3 years, he'll be in for life. We just got to change the system. People deserve a chance. The greatest honor I've had in the last decade is when he turned to me and said, "You're the father I never had." We need to be able to create more situations like that in the community. I'm very happy for this bill. I hope we see more of it. Thank you, Rep.
Thank you, sir. Seeing no more public testimony, members, we're now in debate. Anyone wish to debate? Representative Chambliss, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Rep. Hart, for this bill, but also your leadership on this issue. I, as a freshman lawmaker, I've learned so much from watching your lead and seeing the work that you do, because you're not just carrying somebody's bill and saying, "Hey, it's a bill I present." The work that you do in our prison systems and making sure that somebody cares about the least of these is motivating, and I just really appreciate it. And again, just thank you for your leadership.
Representative Gregory, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And I also want to echo Representative Chambliss's comments. Representative Hart, you've been an inspiration to me and so many others in the Florida legislature. Your work in this area, I will tell you, inspired me to go visit a correctional facility this summer, and we've talked about that. And so just admire your passion and your work in this area, and thanks for doing that, and thank you for bringing this bill.
Thank you.
Anybody else in debate? Seeing none, Representative Hart, you recognize close on your bill.
I just want to start by saying thank you, Rep. Brandon, for allowing me that opportunity to present this bill. And Whitney, I want to thank you for your work in helping us to get the bill in the right posture to be able to present the bill today. Many of you all do know that I've spent my last 4 years here in the House working for people who I felt had no voice. And that's part of the reason I brought this bill. But I have to be honest with you all and say to you, none of this is my doing. It's not my bill. It's the people who are incarcerated and some who have been released that gave me the information and helped me to better understand what it is that they needed in order for some of our people to be released. So I'd just like to say that HB 169 simply tells the commission and the department, let's work together to develop a program which identifies inmates eligible for parole, offer them that option, and give them the tools to re-enter our community safely. I know that safety is the prime reason that so many times we don't get any criminal justice movement, and I understand it. But I tell you that many of these people who we're releasing will come back to our community. I want them to be prepared and educated properly to return. So the programs that they currently have are programs that we desperately need, but I'm not asking for anything that will create any financial hardship on the state of Florida. In fact, it's gonna give us some release for some of the people who may be able to go home. And remember, the average age for release is 65 to 90 years old. These are people who've spent the entire portion of their life for whatever crime it is that they have committed. But the best part of this is that we're giving them the tools that they need to go home and be safe in our communities. So I just thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Representative Hart. Having closed on her bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 169 and announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Boussada Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Thompson? Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Brennan?
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. Show HB 169 reported favorably as amended.
Thank you.
We now move to HB 1461. Reinstatement of suspended driver's license by Representative Driscoll. Welcome. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, committee members. The Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles may, at the request of our clerk of court, suspend or revoke the driver's license of a person for certain financial reasons, such as failure to pay court costs associated with a criminal case or civil penalties for a traffic violation. House Bill 1461 creates the Operation Greenlight pilot program within the Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles and creates the requires a pilot program to be administered by the clerks of court in 5 counties. Unlike current Operation Greenlight and driver's license reinstatement day events, the pilot program is not limited to a single yearly event, but would be conducted year-round. To participate in the pilot program, a person must contact the clerk of court, and his or her driver's license or driving privilege must be suspended for an eligible reason, including drive it without a valid license, driving with a suspended driver's license, failing to make a payment on penalties and collection, failing to appear in court for a traffic violation, or failing to comply with directives for a traffic infraction or driver's license offense. And the pilot program, in essence, would work with these individuals who have their licenses suspended to try to get them back on track with making their payments and hopefully avoid suspension of the license.
Thank you. Members, any questions on the bill? Representative Roach, or Vice Chairman Roach, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Rep, for the bill. Just curious, what are the 5 counties, and how was it determined which counties would be able to participate and which counties would not be able to participate?
That's a great question, and there is actually an amendment on the bill, so we'll talk about that a little bit more, but there is the Florida Clerks of Courts Corporation that is referenced in the amendment, and we would allow them to pick the counties. The amendment actually increases the counties from 5 to 6, and we're going to work with the clerks so they can pick 2 large, 2 medium, and 2 small to try to have a wide range of data that they can collect on the efficacy of the program.
Okay. Seeing no more questions, we will now move to that amendment. Amendment barcode 043267. You're recognized to explain this amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the amendment simplifies and renames the pilot program the Drive for Success pilot program and creates the program within the Florida Clerks of Court Operations Corporation to be administered in at least 6 counties selected by the corporation. It requires the participating clerks of court to contact persons whose driver licenses are suspended rather than requiring the persons to contact the clerk. It requires the participating clerks to test at a minimum the efficacy of communicating with the pilot program participants via telephone, text message, email, or other electronic means to notify participants of payment due dates and missed payments. It also establishes consequences for participants who fail to make timely payments, including but not limited to specifying the period of time after which a participant's license may be resuspended for failing to make payments. It also authorizes a pilot program participant's driver's license to be reinstated upon the first payment that is made under his or her partial payment plan, but does not require a participant to pay a driver's license reinstatement fee to have his or her license reinstated. It requires a participating clerks of court to provide specified data to the governor, the Senate president, the Speaker of the House, and the minority leaders of the state, the Senate and the House of Representatives, and it provides that the pilot program expires on June 30th, 2026, unless otherwise provided by law, but provides that any partial payment plan established prior to that expiration date remains valid even if the pilot program expires by operation of law. And that, Mr. Chair, is the amendment.
Thank you for the explanation. Any questions on the amendment? See no questions. Any public testimony? We don't have any. Any members wishing to debate on the amendment? No debate. Representative Driscoll, you recognize closing your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, I hope that we can have your favorable support today. This builds on the good work started by Operation Greenlight, which I learned last night. Our colleague, Representative Thompson, actually helped to establish that program while serving in the legislature some years ago. And as you can imagine, there are many Floridians who get caught up in this cycle where they owe fines and fees but they can't afford to pay them, their license gets suspended, and then they're unable to drive to work to, I don't know, make money to pay their fines and fees. So we're trying to intervene and stop this vicious cycle while also helping our clerks who depend on this revenue for their operations. I think it's a good bill, a smart bill, and one that is very efficient with resources, and I ask for your favorable support. Thank you.
Thank you. If you favor adoption of the amendment, signify by saying yay.
Yay.
If you're opposed, say no. By your vote, show the amendment as adopted. Now back on the bill as amended. I'll move to public testimony. On the bill as amended, we have Aaron Waite, Florida Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, waves in support. Jason Harrell, Florida Court Clerks and Comptrollers, Director of Government Relations for them, waves in support. Philip Suderman, Americans for Prosperity, Policy Director, wishes to speak. Is he here? He's in support. Dan Hendrickson, Tallahassee Veterans Legal Collaborative, wishes to appear. He's not here, but he is a proponent of the bill. Kara Gross, American Civil Liberties Union of Florida, waves in support. Any other testimony? Seeing none, members, we are now in debate on the bill as amended. Ranking Member Grieco, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think it goes without saying that I'm up on the bill. For folks that aren't familiar, this is a big problem. Down in Miami, we have the Drive Legal program for years, and you know, it starts as simple as you get a moving violation or even a non-moving violation. Say you get pulled over for, you know, having an obstructed tag, and then you move or you don't have the financial resources to pay it, and then your license gets suspended. And then you get pulled over and you go to, you may or may not go to jail pursuant to 322.34. And there's knowingly and unknowingly. And then it turns into this thing and it's more fees. And then you get another one. All of a sudden you're a habitual traffic offender. These things really, and it affects folks with lower incomes exponentially more than folks that are just not paying attention. So it's a great bill. It's a great way to get people back on the road and back in the good graces of the court system and back working. So I'm a huge supporter of this, as I have been back home, and I hope everybody else is as well.
Thank you, Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Driscoll, for bringing this very good bill, which expands a program that I piloted from a single event annually to year-round. And it makes such a difference in the lives of people who've had their driver's licenses suspended, who can't drive for a doctor's visit. They can't drive their children to school. They can't drive to church to worship. Can't drive to see their family members. And in the point that you make, they can't drive to look for employment, a job search, so that they can pay the fines and fees, which had nothing to do with the driver's violation, as Representative Grieco has pointed out. And so to see this program expand year-round and to other counties is just very gratifying, and I thank you for bringing it, and I'll be up on the bill. Thank you.
Anyone else in debate? I will say this. I remember this vividly. When my son was born, my county judge called me, Judge Maney, at the hospital and said, he was a new county judge at that time, very young county judge, and he said, you know, we're seeing a lot already. I'm just overwhelmed with how many people are in county court with driver's license problems. He said, can you help me come up with some ideas on how we might be able to assist those folks? So we put our heads together, and we found out about a program. Well, it comes full circle. My son's 28 years old now, that baby I was talking about. And I teach that course. It's called Driving While License Suspended or Revoked Assistance Course, and it is to help people learn how to get their license back. But with all that being said, there are two main obstacles to getting your license back in Florida. One is the money issue. It's all about the money. It's like digging a hole and it just gets deeper. But there is another issue, and I don't know what the answer to this one is, and it's called procrastination. People put off things, don't we? So if we can get past those two obstacles, we can help folks get their driver's license back. So I'm glad to have you here today to present this bill. Maybe we can find a way to get halfway home on that issue, because money is a big obstacle. So Thank you for this, and with that being said, you may close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's been wonderful to learn about your passion around this subject matter, and I think I pretty much said it all in my close on the amendment, but it only remains to thank so many of you who took time with me to talk about this bill, and your questions definitely helped to make it sharper, so I appreciate it, and with that, I close.
Thank you, Representative Driscoll. Having closed on the bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 1461 and announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Bousada Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Brennan?
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. Show HB 1461 reported favorably as amended. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Congratulations. Now moving on to CS for HB 1143, mental health and substance abuse by Representative Maney. You're recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice Chairman, Mr. Ranking Member, and members of the committee. Thank you for letting me share this bill with you and ask for your support. It's based on my experience as a judge dealing with a broken law, actually two broken laws. The Baker Act law, as many of you know, deals with people who are of imminent danger to themselves or others, and the Marchman Act deals with people who are dependent on drugs or alcohol. It provides for involuntary civil commitment. The alternative is those people go to jail. The law really doesn't work. It doesn't work well. This is, in my view, a very important bill. I want to hit a couple of highlights for you. This law grants law enforcement the same discretion that judges and physicians have. That is an improvement on liberty for the people. It gives the law enforcement people discretion by changing the word shall to may. The law The proposal will make the Marchman Act more efficient. The current law requires two separate petitions, one for evaluation and another for treatment. It combines those two, so if treatment's not needed, the case is just over. Cuts down on the requirements for the family and the court to expend resources. It adds a community mental health section so that nurses in that field can go ahead and discharge people without making them wait for a physician. It revises certain provisions on the Commission for Mental Health. The current law requires them to meet virtually. The amendment lets them meet in person, and it going to require DCF to collect data and report that data so we can get a better feeling on the scope of the problem and map better solutions. And I want to mention this is a real problem for law enforcement throughout the state. And I'm very pleased to say that the mayor of Crestview is here together with his city manager, the city manager of Fort Walton Beach, Crestview City Councilman. I think people who deal with the problem day to day of this very vulnerable population know that we're spending way too much money and getting very little for it. Mr. Chairman, that's the bill. I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Maney. Members, are there any questions? Representative Lerner, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, General, for the bill. I wanted to just ask, because I know last year you had a large Baker Act reform bill that was frankly way more complicated than a simple guy like me could understand. I love the bill you're working today. I'm just hoping you could help explain to me a little bit the difference between your effort last year on this effort and then what are we seeing today? Are they basically just a progress? What are the differences between last year's proposal and this year's?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. This is a result of the legislative process where it's more simplified. One of the big things that I wanted to do last session, which was not favorably considered and did not get a hearing at all, was I wanted to expand the criteria for Baker Act commitments. I'm not going to refight that issue this year. We may look at it next year if I can get this through this year. But it's just my long-term goal is to have a system that treats people before they get in trouble, because we know who they are, treats people when they are in trouble, and provides aftercare so they don't get in trouble again. We're not there yet. This isn't, for me, this is an interim step, but I think it's an important step to improve the law as it currently stands. The current law just really doesn't work.
Any other questions? Seeing none, I see no amendments. Any public testimony?
There is a tied bill, though, Mr. Chairman.
Ron Book, Miami-Dade Homeless Trust, waves in strong support. David Micah, Jr., Florida Hospital Association.
He's present.
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Good morning. Again, David Micah with the Florida Hospital Association. I want to thank the general for this great bill. It's a big task. This is a very difficult section of law where unintended consequences affect everything throughout that process, and he saw that firsthand. And our emergency departments too often see it firsthand, and that's why we're here today. Behavioral health is a key component of health in every community, and Florida hospitals are glad that he took on this challenge and is able to move it through this year and get some work done. And we know he'll be back next year to keep going at the task. Thank you for your support.
Thank you, sir. Matthew Dunnigan, Florida Sheriff's Association, waves in support. J.B. Witten, waves in support. Cynthia Sue Brown, City of Crestview, waves in support. Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waves in support. Shane Messer, Florida Council for Behavioral Health Care, waves in support. Dane Bennett, Baptist Health, waves in support. Jennifer Pritt, Florida Police Chiefs Association, waves in support. Dan Hendrickson, waves in support. Bonnie Barlow, Bridgeway Center, waves in support. And Michael Beatty, City of Fort Walton Beach, says wants to appear to you. You wave. Thank you, sir. Any other public testimony? Seeing none, we are now in debate. Any members in debate? Representative Maney? Seeing no debate, recognized to close on your bill.
Mr. Chairman, I waive closing. Thank you. Ask for support.
Thank you, sir. Representative Maney having closed on his bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 1143 and announce that vote.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Bousada Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco, Haig,
yes.
Learned,
yes.
Maney,
yes.
Rizzo,
yes.
Roach,
yes.
Snyder,
yes.
Thompson, Tuck,
yes.
Chair Brannon,
yes.
16 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Lindsay. Show HB 1143 reported favorably. Rep. Maney, you now have HB 1157, public records component, court records by yourself.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a simple public records exemption. It's going to extend the date, and it basically just affects appeals. Currently, it's going to allow, in some cases, appeals to use the name of the parties, you know, state versus PM, at some point you lose contact with who's involved. So in some cases in appeals, they'll be able to use the name. Other than that, it protects the privacy of everybody who's involved. It does protect the privacy totally at trial level. That's the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions on the bill? No questions? No amendments? Public testimony? We have Michael Beattie, once again, City of Fort Walton Beach, waving in support, crawling to the bill. Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waving in support. Any other public testimony? Members, anybody in debate? Anybody in debate? Seeing none, Rep. Manning, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Like my brother, Representative Bush from the Panhandle says, I just ask for a little blessing today and ask your support. I waive closing.
He's up next. He'll have a chance to ask that. Thank you, sir. Rep. Manning, having closed on his bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 1157. Announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Visada Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Blessing, yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco? Haig?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Thompson? Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Brennan?
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Show HB 1157 reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank the committee.
Representative Bush has moved into position. We're now ready for HB 1561, County and Municipal Detention Facilities. Sir, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. Let me find my spot here. And let me put my glasses on. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of this committee, let me briefly say House Bill 1561 is a county and municipal detention facility. A little background on the bill. Under the current law, a 5-member working group appointed by the Florida Sheriff Association and the Florida Association of Counties is responsible for developing the Florida Model Jail Standard. The Model Jail Standard provides minimum standards for county and municipal detention facilities, also known as jails, relating to construction, equipment, maintenance, and operation. The model jail standards contain requirements for annual inspections of jail facilities. There are no direct financial penalties for noncompliance. Essentially, what this bill does, House Bill 1561 does, the bill makes several changes to the process for developing the model jail standards, inspections of county and municipal detention facilities, and penalties for noncompliance, including adding a physician, a psychiatrist, to the working group that developed the model jail standards, requiring special consideration to given to incarcerated pregnant women, as provided in session 944.241. Also requesting, requiring the detention facilities inspection process to be provided in the model jail standards. The current law under statute does not require inspections. It requires inspection by the statute. Secondly, requesting each detention facility to be inspected twice yearly, with one being unannounced and the other being, being announced and one unannounced. Providing time limitations for a detention facility to correct any violation that is observed during an inspection. Providing fines if a detention facility fails to correct violations of the model jail standards. Requiring a detention facility to close if failed to correct serious violations within a specified period of time. Lastly, withholding the salaries of any person that refuses to allow inspections access to a detention facility or corporate cooperation with the inspection. I've done that very quickly, Mr. Chair, reading very fast, and that is the essence of the bill.
Thank you, sir, for the presentation and explanation. Are there any questions on the bill? Representative Casella, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Rep. This is a good bill. I'll be up on it. Why doesn't this bill, the way it's written, doesn't include state facilities in with it, only county municipal?
I'm not sure. When I looked at the bill, I had the same concerns and the same questions, but I do have the Sheriff Association here with me, and I'm quite sure that they can answer that question. Would you, if it's all right, Mr. Chair, could I ask
yes, sir.
That the Sheriff Association come and address that issue?
Morning.
Matt Dunnigan with the Florida Sheriff Association. The Florida Model Jail Standards has oversight over all of the county-run detention facilities, the jails. That's their purview. The state has jurisdiction over the State Department of Corrections. So that is already covered, I believe. And so what the Florida Model Jail Standards does is take care of the county-run jails.
That's good. Thank you. And that's been the case for many years, the way it's set up. Any other questions? Okay, I do see that we have an amendment, barcode 155669. 155669. Rep. Bush, you're recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is a technical amendment. The amendment makes technical and organizational changes to House Bill 1561 to improve clarity and readability. The substance of House Bill 1561 remains unchanged. That's the essence of the amendment.
Thank you, sir. Any members wishing to ask questions on the amendment? Questions on the amendment? Seeing none, public testimony, we have none. Any members wishing to debate on Representative Bush's amendment? Seeing no one, Representative Bush, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
Bless me.
Rep. Bush having closed. Lindsay, don't even need you, Lindsay. How about me just saying, if you're in favor, say yay.
Yay.
If you're opposed, say no. By your vote, the amendment is adopted. We're now back on the bill as amended. Is there any public testimony on the bill? We have Aaron Waite, Florida Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, waving in support. Matthew Dunnigan, who you just heard from, Florida Sheriff's Association, wants to speak. Welcome back.
Morning. I just wanted to say just something really quick. Appreciate Representative Bush filing this bill. I'd also like to acknowledge the House Criminal Justice staff, their hard work on this amendment, their dedication, and hard work does not go unnoticed. We greatly appreciate their help. The reason why the sheriffs feel so strongly about this is the Florida Model Jail Standards have been in existence now for 25 years. After 25 years, it being chaired right now by Sheriff Bill Farmer of Sumter County and having two sheriffs and two county commissioners on it, we feel it's a fantastic opportunity to strengthen the commission by adding two members, but also ensuring that all jails are inspected every year. I also just make sure the committee knows we have 67 counties jails, or 67 counties, 58 of them are run by sheriffs. Sheriffs do not run every jail in every county. Several counties have their county commission in charge of it. So we believe making sure that all jails are inspected every year will continue to improve the standards and improve the conditions to make sure all of our jails are safe and secure, and we seek your favorable support. Thank you.
Thank you. That has been in place, as I said, for a long time. It's worked very effectively and very efficiently, and we appreciate Sheriff Farmer's chairmanship of that. I understand he's a pretty good singer, too. All right, we have Barney Bishop waving his support with Florida Smart Justice Alliance. Okay, see no more public testimony, no more cards. Members, we are in debate on the bill as amended. Anybody wishing to debate, members? Representative Maney, recognized in debate.
I'm for the bill because I have seen county jails get overcrowded and stay overcrowded for years because the counties don't want to allocate the money to the sheriff to address the problem. Jails are expensive to build, expensive to man, expensive to provide the medication, and I think standards will go a long way to forcing the fiscal controllers to address the needs of people who are incarcerated. Remember that many people in jail still have a presumption of innocence. They haven't been convicted of anything. And even the people who are convicted really should be treated better than sleeping in what they call boats, little plastic platforms on the ground. So I'm for the bill. Thank you for bringing this bill.
Thank you, sir. Anybody else in debate? Okay. Representative Bush, you're recognized to close on the bill as amended.
Rep, I normally just say I need a blessing, but I have to agree with you on that. Not only have I visited pretty much almost every prison in the state of Florida, I have also visited jails over the last 30, should I say the last 30, 35 years. And I think what this bill is going to do is it's going to force the landlord to do what is necessary when it's budget time in the counties to put the necessary dollars there so the people that are incarcerated can be treated like human beings. With that, I need a blessing.
Thank you, sir. Having closed on his bill, Lindsay, please call the roll on HB 1561 as amended and announce the vote.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Bousada Cabrera?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Betterhoff?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco? Haig?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes to blessings and yes to the bill.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Brannon?
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Show. HB 1561 as amended reported favorably.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Members, I see no other further business which should properly be conducted. And with that, we did get through 10 bills this morning. Thank you for your time and attention. And Representative Haig, without objection, will move that we arise. And if nobody objects, this meeting is adjourned.